Welcome to Heartland Darkland. I'm Cassie.
And I'm Shannon.
Hey, Darkhearts.
Hey, Darkhearts. When we try to say it together, it never works out, because when I listen back to it, it's always off. So I'm just not going to do that now.
No, it's fine. And patrons, you're welcome to that little intro. That's what happens when I've been up since 4:15 this morning.
Mm-hmm. That's what happens when I just, it doesn't matter what time I get up. I'm always tired. So
I mean, that's fair too. I am, but yeah, I'm extra today because, you know, last minute Larry here, I typed my notes up this morning.
Yep.
I had them written out. I just needed to get them all like organized and typed out. That's I got fine. Home from work yesterday and I was like, I'm so tired. I was in bed by 9:30.
I was too last night. I got all these texts and I woke up like this morning and I was like, what the heck at like 9:30? And I missed all of them because I was asleep. And it was asleep. Amazing.
I was like, I am so tired. I was like, I'll just stay up after I go work out and get my notes done then. It'll be fine. I have plenty of time.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I passed out and then I woke up and I was like, okay, I bet you my alarm's about to go off to get up because it goes off at 4:17.
Yuck.
I looked at my clock and it was 1:39. I was like, oh, hot damn. I've got so much time.
Yeah, I know. Just like, but like,
I felt like I had slept for so long.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, that's the best feeling ever when you wake up and then you realize you still have so much more time to sleep.
Yes.
You know, sometimes you just want to set your alarm. I mean, you don't, but on the days that you don't have to wake up early, just for that satisfaction of like, I can go back to sleep.
I know.
I mean, it's rare, but you know.
I know that they say that even like on the days that you don't have to, like you should get up at the same time every single day, but I'm sorry. Gross. I love sleeping in so much.
Yep.
I can't bring myself to do it. If I have the opportunity to sleep in, I'm gonna do it.
I agree. And like our ongoing joke at our house now, every single Friday night, I say, you know what I'm excited for? And my daughter immediately is like, I know, sleeping in. Because it's like every Friday, I'm just like, I cannot wait to sleep in tomorrow. And by sleeping in, it's like maybe 8:30 at the latest, but like, I'll take it.
Yeah. Totally. My daughter and I would probably sleep till like 9:30, 10 o'clock if we could on Saturdays. But my husband and son, well, my husband doesn't let us. He like comes up by like 8:30. He's like, oh, you guys going to sleep all day? Yes.
Yeah,
if you
actually,
would leave me alone.
Yeah, I would actually love to do that. Thank you very much.
I would love that. Thanks.
Yeah, go away. Jeez.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, on a heavier note, you guys, we wanted to take a moment to name the victims of the Covenant School shooting that happened in Nashville on Monday afternoon. I got out of a session with a client at work and one of my coworkers was like, did you hear about the shooting? I was like, what shooting? Where? She's like, yeah, it was an elementary school. It's like pre-K through sixth grade.
Sick.
I could go on such a thing. I know Shannon, you and I have talked about it and I don't know if you saw the post because then she tagged me in it. The representative for that district, her Christmas picture that year was her and her husband and her three young sons all holding guns.
Classy.
Like AR-15s.
See, like, I don't understand that because...
And I'm like, and this is
why does anybody need, military-grade guns? Like,
right. Maybe they were just, like, hunting rifles. I don't honestly know. I'm not a gun person.
No. I'm not at all. I get very heated about that topic.
I can't imagine taking your Christmas picture with you all holding guns. Why?
That's gross. And of course, like all that stuff will come out, you know, now and all that. But it's like, well, I wish something would have changed before that because it's just sad that
I don't understand why shit didn't change with Sandy Hook.
I don't know why things didn't change with before, like Columbine. You know, like, I mean, if you want to go back, I mean, it should have been changed very long ago.
But Sandy Hook is the first one I remember happening with elementary students.
Yeah.
Well, I take that back. Wasn't there one in the 90s with the girl who said, I hate Mondays, who shot, was it a middle school or an elementary school?
I don't know that one.
I bet you do. I think it was in California. I bet if you heard it, you would know.
Yeah. I feel like it's sad now because there's so many of them that you don't really even hear about them as much anymore. That one yesterday, I was just like sick to my stomach all day about it.
there was a woman who went there was a news station in front of the school, and a woman took over and she's like, aren't you guys sick of this? Aren't you sick of covering this? And like, what's going on? I'll have to send you the TikTok later. Like, it was phenomenal. I was like, yeah. Anyways, we wanted to name the victims. The first three are children. They were all 9 years old. I can't imagine as a parent. School is where you're supposed to not have to worry about your children.
I know. I'm like, yesterday when I picked up my daughter from school, I was just like, I'm going to hug you. And she's like, okay.
Right.
But, you know, honestly. So
we had Evelyn Dekus, which I might be saying her last name wrong. Haley Scruggs and William Kinney were the 3 9-year-old children. And then we had three adults, which was Cynthia Peake, who was 61, Catherine Kuntz, who was 60, and Mike Hill, who was 61. And Mike Hill, I saw some stuff, like, he was, the maintenance person there and stuff. And I think Cynthia was, like, ish in charge of something with the, like, higher up in the school or something. I mean, it's sad all the way around.
It's awful. They're the ones that are there to teach and protect your kids and love on them when you're not, you know, you can't. And
yeah,
it's just, it's, and it's so like, sad.
It's like, do we have to start like retrofitting all schools with bulletproof windows and stuff now? Like,
I know. And even then it's like, I'm still curious, well, because it will be interesting when more details come out, but like they said how she got in a side door. And
they showed video. They, because I don't know their gender. They misgendered them. They were possibly trans person.
I know. I'm like, I don't even really care about any of that with them.
That's why I've just not been mentioning that person. But the shooter, someone tagged me and I was like, I don't know why you tagged me in this. Luckily it didn't show anything, but it showed that the shooter shot in the glass.
Oh, that's doors. How. Okay, because they just said she got in a side door, and I'm like, okay.
Well, she might have, like, they showed their van driving around and parking and stuff, but they came in and they shot through the two doors, sets of doors.
Gross.
Very easily, too, which, of course, with an AR-15 or assault rifle, whatever it was,
God.
A regular, like, hunting rifle probably would have easily shot through it, too. But I feel like not as quickly.
I know.
And you can't shoot as many, you know, you have to reload and stuff. You can't shoot anyways. Like, that is just...
It's just absolutely awful. And I saw such a sad picture of, like, on one of the articles of, like, a little girl inside a bus with, like, her hand on the window. And she's looking out, like, bawling. And I was like, I can't even look at this stuff anymore.
No.
It's just awful and traumatizing. Our children
should have to worry about. And
I know.
Like, my son has come home after they've done, though. I think they call them – they don't call them shooter drills. I think they call
lockdowns.
They call them lockdowns or, like, something. But, like – you know, he's come home scared after they've done those drills.
My child, like, basically, I'm sure she would love me sharing this information, but she gave herself like a bladder infection. I don't know if I told you the story, because she was not peeing at school all day because she's so scared that she's going to be in the bathroom and that's going to happen and she's going to be locked out of a room. And she's like, she said she's scared she's going to have to stand like on a toilet and hide. So she was like not going to the bathroom at all. And I'm like, you know what? Like, that's a problem. It's not okay. And I wish they would tell them it's a drill, because I know there's been times in the past where she told me she was like on the verge of like throwing up. She was so scared. And then they found out it was a drill. And I'm like, you know what? Like, I understand you need to be prepared and all that. And I mean, but still, it's like, I don't like that our kids have to be scared to go to school. It's sad.
No. Not okay. No. So that's really heartbreaking. I don't know when enough will finally be enough that actual change will happen. But unfortunately, I don't have any hope that this is going to be it.
Mm-mm.
I think the people who want to keep guns are going to turn it into about this person's gender identity when that's not the case at all. Like, there have been plenty of other people who have done school shootings.
I mean, generally, anybody who has done a school shooting is mentally ill in some capacity, yeah, regardless. So,
so we need gun reforms. We need better, yeah, mental health care here. Like, yeah, totally. These are the focuses, you know? Yeah. So
that's the sad note.
Yeah. That's the unfortunate sadness of, and reality for our children these days. Mm-hmm. And it's not okay.
No, it's awful.
So we wanted to draw attention to that. But yeah, so I guess there's no good segue out of that.
Nope. We'll just jump right into whatever you got here. We're
gonna jump right in. This is our last case for the Women's History Month. And again, my case this week kind of takes place, this time it's only in two different places, and they're both in the Midwest. It's Michigan and Indiana. It's mainly Michigan, so I'm probably going to title this as a Michigan episode. Yeah. But it's also, so like the other reason why I put off like typing up my notes is because like, there's kind of a lot to this story. There is and there isn't. I could have gone into so much fine detail. I'll talk about that a little bit more. But, like, I struggled to know where I wanted to start with this story.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was a few different places and ways I could have started. So I'm going to try to stay on a linear timeline. Forgive me if I jump around a little bit.
Yeah, it works.
So first off, I watched Snapped, which was season 24, episode 13 on Peacock. And then I watched Dead North, which is a four-part documentary on Discovery Plus. Dead North had definitely a ton more information. I felt like sometimes they put in an excessive amount, like things, mm-hmm, that weren't really necessary. But like, I feel like Snap left some things out that maybe they should have brought up.
Yeah, I feel like that a lot about the Snap cases. Sometimes I like watching those coinciding with something else because I feel like, yeah, there's, yeah, very important things that I'm like, wait, they didn't say that in that, but...
Right. And so some of the things they said in Snapped, like, was slightly different in the other thing. And I'm like, okay, well, did Snapped just, like, be like, oh, well, this happened, so, like, whatever, we'll just say it this way? Because it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I will say, like I said, Dead North felt a little excessive for me. I don't think it needed to be four episodes. I feel like they dragged out a lot of stuff. I also feel like, yeah, I'll get into a little bit more. I have, towards the end of it, I had issues with parts of it, but I'll get into that later. Okay, so today we are talking about Kelly Cochran.
The name is familiar.
It's in 2016 cases when you would have heard about her.
Okay.
But you'll see why. So she was born June 5th in 1982 in Merrillville, Indiana. As was her husband, Jason Cochran. They were actually neighbors. And, like, it sounds like, I don't know if they were high school sweethearts. I don't know if Jason went to high school, if he dropped, mm-hmm, out. What? There's not a ton of information about Jason necessarily. But they were together at a young age for a long time. And they got married shortly after Kelly graduated high school in 2002. I'm not exactly sure when Jason was born, but I ended up figuring out that he was 2 years older than her.
Okay.
So depending on when they started dating, that could have been weird and creepy.
Once again, I feel like that's the trend lately with our cases.
I mean, at least 17 and 19 doesn't feel
as bad as the last one was, like, but the 5-year difference.
But at the same time, 15 and 17 sounds weird to me.
It does. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know.
I agree.
Maybe it's because I'm a mom. Now I know.
I think, yeah, when you're 15, you definitely don't think it's too old for, like,
oh, right, 100%. So yep, you know. And in Dead North, they interview Kelly's mom, and she talks about how she was a troubled teen who did drugs, and I think she ran away a couple times.
Uh-huh.
But of course, like, mom's not gonna paint herself in a bad light. And I'm not saying, right, mom was an issue, but also, like, we don't know what her home life was like either.
Yeah.
And I mean, it does happen where kids, I mean, listen, first of all, teenagers do drugs.
Yeah.
Kind of doesn't matter what their home life is like. Not always, but it's
some, but they could have a fine home life.
Yeah. Running away, I don't know, that's hit or miss. I feel like sometimes it's an attitude thing and they're like, oh, you don't know me. But then sometimes it's a home life thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like I said, Kelly and Jason, they get married shortly after she's out of high school. So she's like 18, he's 20. Jason has like a pool service company that actually does pretty well for a while. I think they had it for like 5 years or so. Again, some of the stuff you don't get a ton of detail, but then Jason like really fucked up his back and couldn't like lift things anymore, so he couldn't work.
Yikes.
So Kelly starts working multiple jobs, trying to keep them afloat. I don't know if Jason's getting any sort of disability or anything.
That's what I was wondering.
It's never brought up. And with Kelly working multiple jobs and stuff, like, it sounds like they can't, like, no matter how hard she's working, they just can't stay ahead of things. So they decide they're going to move to, well, they wanted to move. I think, I don't know why they thought that that would give them a fresh start. Like, your debt follows you, but they also wanted to move somewhere where weed, medical weed, marijuana was legal for Jason's pain. Because he's just constantly in pain.
And so, he's okay, pretty fair. Young still, right? I mean, they're still
fairly
young.
Uh-huh. So he, I mean, he'd have been, well, okay, we'll get into it. Because then when they move, it's like 2000, it might have been like 2013, 14 when they, it's like 2014, I think. This is, again, where some stuff says 13, some says 14. Yeah. I think it's 14. But then they talk about how Kelly was 33. And I'm like, if she was born in 82, wouldn't she have been 32?
Yeah.
So I don't know. Anyways, she's like early 30s. So he's got to be like mid 30s, right?
Yeah. So that's young. I mean, to be like possibly on disability and just not working. Right. And that's brutal.
So they moved to Caspian, Michigan, which I'm like, Michigan had medical marijuana at that time? But he got his medical marijuana license.
I had no idea. I feel like the one that everybody just knows is like Colorado.
That was like, well, but that's because I guess it was, Colorado's was recreational.
Yeah. And I suppose that's true. That's for where, just like, medicinal. Yeah.
For just medicinal. So he got like his medicinal license or card, whatever he needed for it. But like also, so Jason, like I said, doesn't work. Kelly's working multiple jobs. Even when they move to Caspian, he sits at home all day and like plays computer games or video games. I guess he went for walks too, which like, cool, good for you. But sitting in a chair playing video games for hours on end is not going to help that back pain.
I was just going to say, that probably doesn't help your back, and going on walks probably doesn't either. I mean, in reality, I mean, moving it, but going, I can think of other exercise that would help your back, but it's fine.
I mean, there's so many things. I'm like, I'm not a doctor. Did we not try things for, I don't know. Anyways. Listen, whatever.
Probably really not that big part of the story, but we could focus on his back a lot longer being massage therapists, you know.
Exactly. So yeah, so they're there. Kelly's working multiple jobs. Because like in Dead North, they interview one of her old coworkers from this diner she had worked at. But like her main job she works at is this factory in Iron Rivers, Michigan, which is like a few minutes away. Because there was actually a path that was only like 3 or 4 miles that they mentioned Jason walking that could take him from Caspian to Iron Rivers. So like where I grew up, we had like a little town, quote unquote town, that was like right outside mine, but like it was like 2 minutes away and it wasn't really a town. It was just a collection of houses.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what this sounds like. This was, it was like an old mining community.
Mm, okay.
Cause there's a bunch of like old mines and stuff around there. So Caspian is essentially like part of Iron Rivers. It's like a few minutes away, you know?
Yeah.
So she's working at this factory, that makes like naval parts or parts for the Navy, like ships and stuff like that. And this is where she meets 53-year-old Chris Regan. And he is a retired Air Force veteran.
53?
Yep.
And she's mid thirties. I mean, I know when you're older, it doesn't matter, but that's you to me still. But that's just,
first of all, I will say, he's not bad looking for a 53-year-old. Like, I mean, he's aged well.
Okay, that's fair.
I wouldn't necessarily call him a silver fox, but like, he doesn't look bad for 53. Yeah. Her, okay, on the other hand, for her 30s.
Rough?
We've had a rough.
I'm so like, she looks 53 is what you're getting at?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Listen, I get it, but like, we're clearly a smoker.
Been in the sun, a smoker, all the things.
I'm rough thinking living. We probably did more than just weed in high school. Yeah. I mean,
definitely rough living then.
You know, we've lived a little rough and our body shows it. which is funny because in the reenactment stuff, of course, always make them look so nice. And I'm like,
I know. Real generous. It's so funny. Yeah, these young actors wanting these jobs thinking they're made it big. It's fine. Yeah.
So anyways, like I said, Chris, he had two kids, which is funny because like Snap never mentioned this. I didn't know he had two kids until the documentary, and they only mentioned one of them, and one of them is interviewed. But he also had a girlfriend, Terry, who they had known each other since like the 80s, like when he first enlisted in the Air Force. But like they never, it was always like two ships passing in the night. And it was in 2012 when they like reconnected. They were like, hey, we're gonna do this, because he was back in Michigan. She still lived in Iron Rivers. They did that. And then he moved to Iron Rivers in like 2013, 2014, something like that.
So she's not mother of those, his
no,
kids.
No, she is not. Mm-hmm. She was divorced herself. I don't know if she had kids or not, but nope. This was a, hey, we didn't, you know, it wasn't right then, but it's right now.
Okay.
So Chris is new to the area, right? He doesn't know a lot of people. And obviously Kelly's new to the area. So they start off as friends. They're just two people bonding over being new to this area. Mm-hmm. Everything talks about how like Kelly was this outgoing, super personable person. She loved chatting to people. Whereas her husband, Jason, on the other hand, was very quiet, kept to himself, you know, that kind of stuff.
Interesting. Okay.
Yep. But you know, of course it then did lead to an affair.
I had a feeling we were going that direction.
I know. And so the shows kind of skim over this. I don't know if he cheated on Terry, because him and Terry did break up in 2014. They broke up on good terms. But she even mentions, like, I think it's Snapped or something. She talks about how she was going to go on this trip and he wanted to talk to women while she was gone. And she was like, no, I'm not cool with that. So they broke up. But then in the other thing, she talked about how she had seen on his computer him chatting with other women. So I'm like, let's be honest, he probably cheated.
Yeah. I mean, and if he's getting with what's-her-face now, knowing she's married, then I
Okay, so anyways, despite all this, Terry and Chris are still really good friends. They talk daily still. She does mention at one point that, like, if he was with another woman, he wouldn't respond back to her. So I'm like, I mean, I guess you're somewhat respectful like that.
At least she's not all jealous. Well, I guess that we know of.
Yeah. But. Yeah. So, yeah. Now, October 2014, like I said, Chris and Terry have broken up. They remain friends. But Chris isn't really feeling Michigan anymore. So he's a very outdoorsy guy. He loves the woods. And the thing about, like, it's called Upper Peninsula, Michigan. And it's, like, super close to the Canadian border. There are these gorgeous forests there and stuff, like tons of it. So he loves hiking and doing all that and stuff. That's something him and Terry bonded over. So he wants to get out of Michigan, but he's still looking for that mountain rugged kind of area. And he tells Terry, he's like, hey, I got a job offer in Asheville, North Carolina, and one of his sons actually lives there too. And it sounds like when his son was young, this is a Chris Jr., by the way.
Oh, okay.
So, when they were young, they were really close, but it sounds like they had a falling out, you know, and that's why I wonder too if the second son and him didn't, but they were starting to reconnect. They were building that relationship back up, and actually they were making plans to live together. Like, they interview Chris Jr. and he talks about how like they had plans, you know, they were going to move in together. He was really excited about this. They both were about reconnecting and building that relationship back up. And so, you know, Chris tells Terry this and he's like, yeah, I'm not going to work on the 15th because I've got to do a drug test for this new job, which is like, he was going to pass. He didn't do any drugs, you know, and that was going to be it. And then he was supposed to go to work the next day. October 14th is the last time anyone sees or hears from Chris. So, you know, Terry becomes concerned because, you know, like I said, she mentions, she's like, okay, he didn't respond. So she's like, maybe he, like over the weekend, she's like, well, maybe he was with another woman. It makes sense that he wouldn't respond then. But
now that's odd, especially if they're that good of friends.
Yeah. So she's like, by October 27th, she then goes to the Iron River Police Department and talks to the police captain, Laura Frizzo, and files a missing persons report. And I kind of like it because I'm like, small, progressive small town. Their police chief or captain was a woman, and the sergeant was a woman.
I know. When you just said that, I was like, wow.
Yeah, it was women. I think there was four cops total, and two of them were women.
That's kind of cool.
And they were in charge. Like, yeah. Yes.
And I like that one's name. Did you say, like, Lizzo or something?
It's Frizzo. Frizzo. Which then reminded me of...
Frizzle? Miss Frizzle.
No, Rizzo. I kept thinking Rizzo.
Oh, Rizzo.
Because Greece. I read a book recently that talked about Greece and Rizzo and stuff. That's so funny.
Rizzo. Yeah. Lizzo. Or
Liz. You know.
Whatever the other one. Miss Frizzle. You know, it's fine. Yeah. Yeah. That's cool.
So anyways.
ADD.
So in Dead North, like, Frizzo here, she talks about how she was like, I genuinely believe Terry was in distress and she was brokenhearted. Mm-hmm. She was sobbing, you know. And this is the other part that, because like one thing says that the car was found, but then in the documentary, they talk about how Terry had actually found his car. So it sounds like the apartments that Chris was living in, mm-hmm. Terry's parents actually owned the building. So she had the key. So she takes the cops there. They get into his apartment and it is like in a complete disarray. And she's like, that's really weird for him. But they talk about how there's packing boxes. Okay. So he was getting ready to move.
Right.
He knew he was going to be moving to Asheville. They don't find his cell phone, but they find, you know, they do find the new hire paperwork that should have been sent back and it wasn't filled out. Hmm. They found a bunch of lists that he had made of like things he needed to do and pack. So Terry talks about how she feels like someone was in the house. I don't think so. It sounds to me like someone who's trying to pack up a whole bunch of stuff in a short amount of time.
Uh-huh.
And then stopped mid-packing to go do something and didn't come back.
Right, right.
Yeah. So then she takes them to this like park and stay area or whatever. It's like one of those car parks where you like park your car to do like carpooling and stuff.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And she was like, his car was there. It had been there for the last like 10 days or whatever.
Oh geez.
And she was like, one, he has no reason to park there. Two, he loves this car. It's like some Hyundai, like fancier sportsy car, you know? So she's terrified that his body's in the trunk of it, which I don't know why the cops let her go with.
Right. Because it's a small town, maybe. Like a lot of these cases when it's like, and they went with them and they went inside the building first.
Yes.
It's like, wait, what?
Yep. Yeah. Like even her going into, which she had gone into the apartment beforehand before taking the police there.
Yeah.
Too.
I was thinking about that. I was like, can they really? I mean, okay.
Yes. Which are like, honey.
You I get it, like, yourself olden like times, but this was...
This was 2014.
Come on, Terry.
So they don't find anything. He's not in the trunk. They take it back. What they do find is a post-it note with very detailed directions on it. Because Chris, being new to the Iron Rivers area, didn't know places well. And Terry said that he would be like, how do I get there? Do I turn left at this gas station? Do I turn right at that gas? You know what I mean? So
that's
he had
fair.
Very detailed directions.
Yeah.
Where did they go? If you guessed that it was the house of Kelly and Jason Cochran, you would be correct.
Oh, gosh.
So the police talked to Jason and Kelly. And this is, again, where it, like, gets kind of weird because, like, Snapped is, like, said she denied like having an affair with him until they were then taken to the police station. But then in Dead North, they're talking about how Jason first comes to the door, says Kelly's not there or anything. And he's very kind of like standoffish and a bit surly and stuff. But then Kelly comes up and they're like, I thought you said he wasn't here or she wasn't here. And she's like, oh, he probably just thought I was going to. Yeah. She's like, oh, he probably thought I was in trouble. I was like, that's why. Would he think that?
Right. That's probably why the cops would be there. But I mean, I guess so not necessarily.
Like, yeah. So like, hey, have you talked to him? And she's like, the last time I talked to him was like around the 14th, but I haven't been able to get a hold of him again since then. And so in Dead North, they say that she admits right there in front of her husband that she was having an affair with him.
Oh, I bet that went over well.
She said Jason knew that they had an open marriage, like he knew about her affair and it was fine. Okay. But then they're like, he definitely didn't look like it was fine. But they said in this, like, Kelly was very personable. She was very kind, very helpful.
They usually are, aren't they?
Right. So you know, they were like, okay. So they asked him if they could come down to the station, you know, and talk to them there. And so they do, and they showed in Dead North. So this was kind of neat. In Dead North, they do actually show video footage mm-hmm. of them being interviewed. And Kelly is just very chill, laid back, very helpful. She's like, I have no idea. This is all this. Like, yes, I was having an affair with him. My husband knew all about it. I was actually having an affair with another man as well. Yes.
Okay. You do you, Kelly.
Uh-huh. So they're like, wait, what? She's like, oh yeah. And they were like, well, what was his name? She's like, is that necessary? They're like, well, I can't say that we're not going to go talk to him. Cause you know, it could be like a lover's.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, triangle. Are you sure your husband wouldn't have hurt Jason because you were having an affair?
Knowing.
She's like, no, he wouldn't. Like, well, especially because backtrack a little bit. Kelly is approached by HR saying, hey, we've been told you have some trouble at home. And this is before Chris disappears. And she's like, yeah, Jason threatened to shoot me and then kill himself, but everything's fine.
Hey, Dark Hearts. We wanted to tell you about one of our favorite products that helps keep you safe and also gives you peace of mind.
She's Birdie is a cool little device that is small enough you can hook it on a keychain, bag, or even just carry it.
There are two different types of birdies. The original birdie, when activated, chirps very loud. Trust me, it's ear piercing. We've tried it. And also has an intense strobe light that helps deter attackers and gets the attention of potential bystanders.
The She's Birdie Plus is a Bluetooth-enabled device that connects to an app on your phone that gives you 24/7 support where live reps are available. It can also send you a fake call to get out of an uncomfortable situation, as well as provide GPS location to your chosen contacts. This birdie does require a subscription you can either pay monthly or annually.
The best part is you can get 15% off your order when you use the code DARKHEARTS15.
Check out shesbirdie.com to see what fun colors and patterns you can purchase.
Stay Heartland kind and be extra Darkland wary with your new birdie. Oh, nothing to be concerned about. It's fine.
And HR leaves it at that. Jeez. I'm like, aren't they mandatory reporters if you're in HR? Like, shouldn't you be contacting police?
Any kind of like threat to yourself or other situations? I mean, it's like that in even more professional settings. So why would it not be?
Even as massage therapists, we're trained to like see, keep out
signs like,
for abuse.
Right.
And like report as necessary. Like, I was like, I'm sorry. They're just like, because they're interviewing this HR. Mm-hmm. She's like, yeah, she said it was fine. I was like, are we glossing over the fact that this woman didn't tell anyone this?
Right. I feel like she would be, yeah, like held liable for something there too, just from that statement alone.
Yeah. So,
and not doing anything.
And it turns out like later when they're interviewing, the coworker from the cafe, he talks about how Kelly used to tell him that, you know, Jason would threaten Kelly all the time. He was emotionally abusive, all these things, like how horrible Jason was to her, right?
Okay.
So
even though he had a bad back, I mean, not saying that doesn't mean you can't do anything, but it makes you wonder the severity. I guess having a bad back doesn't mean you can't shoot a gun or whatever.
Right.
Have you.
Right.
Okay.
So Kelly's very open, honest, like very open about her, I'm seeing these men and it's fine and all this stuff, and talks about how Chris was like the love of her life. He actually asked her to go to Asheville with him, but she told him no because her life was here. And like,
do you think that really happened?
Oh, 100% no. And we'll get into that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, Kelly, I mean, if you're...
No. Uh-uh.
Yeah, I think you're just a side piece, but okay.
We'll get into that, yeah. So she's open. She's honest. They're like, cool, okay. So then they go to Jason, and he immediately was like, hey, I just need you to know I'm being treated by a psychologist for extreme anxiety. And then he instantly starts crying. And he had been... committed himself to a psychiatric hospital not that long ago, actually a few days after Chris went missing. He said because he was hearing voices and he was having suicidal ideations. So he, you know, talks about how he wasn't happy with her having these affairs. He knew about them. but he wasn't happy with it. He claims he never met Chris, but again, this path, he says he walks daily.
Oh, right.
They found out there was a way, I don't know if they tracked it, how they tracked it, but it took from his Caspian to Iron Rivers, and actually it showed him going off where he could see his apartment, but it would have been off the trail, like 4 blocks off the trail.
Okay.
But they see from text messages, him texting Kelly about this white truck, which was his, finding her truck there and all this stuff.
So interesting.
They think that he at some point confronted Chris, maybe, but he never admits to that. But he talks about how, you know, he just felt worthless and he felt like he had to let Kelly have these affairs because, you know, he became impotent for like the last year because of his back pain and stuff. And so it was either that or divorce her, or like she was going to divorce him and he didn't want to lose her. So this was the only way to keep her. And like, there was a lot of like negative self-talk in his interview where you're like, this boy's easily manipulated. Like at first you're like, okay, jilted lover, we're pissed. I'll come into my theories with this man, but I think we were just easily manipulated.
Yeah.
And so they're like, okay, well, have you ever threatened to hurt Kelly? And he's like, no, only ever myself. And she's like, well, what if we told you she told people that you threatened to shoot her? And he's like, I don't know why she would say that.
Because she's trying to, get a timeline in place for herself, I'm sure.
Yep. So they find out, they eventually get the other lover's name, and this is Eric Erickson, who also works at the factory. He's actually, so Chris and Kelly weren't in the same departments. Like she did electrical and he did something else. But Eric is, like Chris is his direct supervisor.
Okay.
So Eric is also recently, like he had been in the military. He recently moved back to Iron Rivers. That's where he was from, you know, didn't really know people anymore. So him and Kelly start hanging out. They start having sex pretty quickly. He shows her to an area at a park where they, by this lake, which happens to be across from this car park where we find Chris's car.
His car. Okay.
Which Kelly, I forgot to mention, said she's never heard of this. She's not aware of this car park at all.
Right. In a tiny town.
And also Eric mentions that they had gone there on several occasions in park, just in the car park to have sex.
Yeah. So she's full of shit.
So, you know, obviously, Michigan State Police do get involved because, you know, this is a tiny town. They don't have detectives.
Right.
Terry becomes the number one suspect for them. Which I get.
Well, the guest starts somewhere. Yeah. Yeah. She conveniently can go to his apartment. Yes. And yeah.
Yep. Yep. Okay. Eric Erickson becomes a suspect, obviously, because he actually was out on October 15th from work as well.
Oh. But so just like an odd coincidence. Said,
right. And he was aware of, everyone was aware of Chris and Kelly.
Yeah. Well, in a tiny town too, and all working together there. Like,
yes. Yes.
It's probably not a giant secret by any means.
And Eric was like, yeah, I'd get pissed because she was so hot and cold. Like she'd be texting me and then I wouldn't hear from her for days. And then she would text me, but then we were together and she would tell me Chris was texting her, you know. But he let detectives read through his phone and see all of his text messages between him and Kelly. And they were like, this man ain't it, you know?
Yeah.
And so Laura Frizzo and the Michigan State Police kind of butt heads on because they're still like, it's Terry. And she's like, no, it's not. And I don't know. Dead North again is where it kind of makes, because I think Laura Frizzo had a lot to do with the documentary. I think she was a part of like making it and not just being interviewed for it. Right. And like it really focused on her whole journey. And I'm not saying she didn't do a lot and she's not the hero of the story for helping where things turn out. She just rubs me the wrong way towards the end of it. And I'm just like,
well, that's annoying then because I wanted to like her because, since, you know.
Yeah. Which, like I said, maybe it's just, and I'll tell you why in a bit. But so at this point, Michigan State Police are like, we think that he either completed suicide or took off on his own. But it's like, you think he took off and left all of his stuff and his car?
Right. His car that he loved.
Yeah. How was he getting to Asheville from Iron? I'm pretty sure there's no airport in Iron Rivers, Michigan, and I don't know where the closest one is.
No, he would have to be Yeah, driven somewhere. Why would he leave his car? All of his belongings that he already started packing. He's not going to be halfway done and be like, never mind, I don't want it.
Right. I don't, yeah. So I don't get it. And so, okay, so the reason why, so I'll just kind of jump ahead. The reason why Laura Frizzo rubs me the wrong way is because by the end of the documentary, she talks about how this detective she ended up working with in Indiana, they end up falling in love and dating or getting married. And she was like, yeah, I told him that I couldn't find Chris until I had found him. And I'm like, ew.
Okay.
It's a silver lining that you guys happened, like something positive came out of this. But you're now making it like his whole death was just so you could find your soulmate.
Right. No, no.
Gross.
Yeah. That's really shitty.
Gross. No. And that just made me instantly be like, bitch, I don't like you.
Yeah.
Like, I was in your corner.
Yeah.
That's until
so
you
like
said
just
that.
Insulting to the his.
I was
family
watching that and I literally said, "Ew!" I was watching.
Yeah,
I was like,
"Don't, lady."
I was like,
"I don't
listen.
Like her either." Now
I was like, "I liked you, but this is." Were, and then there's like a part where they show her that she, I don't know, like as they're filming a scene, they actually come across new evidence, and then like she like the way
suddenly
it felt a little much, like it felt forced.
She was so really anyways, excited to be on a documentary, being that she's in a tiny town and not a lot of excitement.
Yeah. So off of my tangent now of Frizzo. So finally in March of 2015, there's a new DA and they get a judge to sign off on a warrant to search the Cochran home. And they find a bunch of weapons there.
Well.
And one of them is an unregistered handgun. On the ceiling, I don't remember if this was the first time or the second time, they do find blood splatter on the ceiling, but it's been painted over, like Luminol highlights it as blood, but it's clearly been painted over. They can't tell, you know? So there's not enough, like, I don't know how an unregistered handgun, I guess I don't know if it's different by states. I don't know how that doesn't get you arrested, but they can't arrest them for anything. They don't have any evidence to tie them to Chris that they can't arrest him right now.
Yeah. The handgun would, I would hope would be enough, but that's also why we're talking about the things we were at the beginning of the thing.
I know.
So, okay.
They do also find a rough draft of a book written by Jason called Quack Quack's Revenge.
What?
Okay. So I'm going to,
okay.
I know. Cause Snapped is where I first had this. And I was like, where the fuck did Quack Quack come from?
Quack Quack's Revenge.
So Quack Quack is Jason's gamer tag. And if you're not a gamer, a lot of stuff, especially if you're playing online gaming, you make a handle. You're not
like
going to put
username,
your real name,
essentially. Yeah.
And so in this book, there's a lot of very dark writing and stuff like that. But there is a character whose description is just like Chris. And he's brutally murdered by Quack Quack.
Darn it, Quack Quack. I was hoping that you were like innocent in this whole thing.
So at this point, you know, so when they're first in their house, they're like, hey, you can't stay here. So they go over to their neighbors, right? Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, cool. Go search our house. Have fun. We'll be over at our neighbors. Neighbors were interviewed in Dead North and they're like, yeah, they were acting kind of weird or whatever. It's like, yeah,
I'm
cops
sure
are searching your house.
Yeah. Even if I didn't do something, I would be acting weird if cops were searching my home.
Right. So finally, like, so they search the home, they leave, and then they go to search the house again, and the Cochrans are now gone. They went back to Indiana, left everything behind.
Oh, okay. And that doesn't look guilty at all.
Right.
They just up and run off. That's, wow.
So, well, and how they found out they were in Indiana is because Laura Frizzo had actually hired two private investigators, and they put a tracking device on his truck.
Good.
One night, like a couple nights before they took off.
Jeez.
So anyways, they're finally interviewing the neighbors, too, of the Cochrans. And they were like, hey, by the way, grandma who lives here actually heard gunshots that night of the fourth in October.
This is just getting brought up now.
This is just getting brought up now. March of 2015.
Oh, just remembered randomly.
Or, March, something like that. So, like, the neighbors are interviewed, you know, in Dead North, too. But they're like, yeah, also, we noticed they were doing a lot of home remodeling. and power tools would be going off, but it was always between 1 and 3 a.m.
Okay, that's a weird time to be working on things. I don't know where this is going, and power tools involved. Okay.
I'm also going to bring this up because if you Google this case, it's going to come up, even though there's no real evidence to support this. This is all hearsay. But the neighbors think the Cochrans fed them Chris. Because shortly after he went missing, they invited them over for a barbecue.
Sick.
And apparently Jason told them that he used to be a butcher specializing in exotic meats. The one neighbor they're interviewing talks about how, like, it had to have been like $100 to $250 worth of meats there. He said it was like, he's like, it's like no meat I've ever seen before. He said it was kind of like translucent. He's like, it almost was like lobster or crab and kind of had the same texture, which I'm like, wouldn't human meat just be like any other animal meat? Like, I've never eaten a human or cut up a human. But I've been to the bodies exhibit, you know, like when it's been in Omaha and stuff. And I'm like, I feel like our meat would look the same, but I don't know.
I mean, I have no idea, but I would guess that maybe.
Yeah. I will say also, I don't know. Like, they
don't want to know.
They don't ever find, and I'll get into this a little bit more, but just to, like, jumping ahead a little bit, they don't ever find more than Chris's head.
So it is.
Or his skull.
I mean, possible.
So there is the possibility. And the guy they interviewed, he was like, after I found this out, he was like, it changed my eating habits. I mean, the man is in has like PTSD almost from thinking
good
he's
God.
Eating a human.
Can you imagine? Not only just eating a human and not knowing it, but then knowing the circumstances mm-hmm. of who and what. Like, you just ate the evidence. And that was smart on their behalf if they're trying to get rid of it, which is sick as well. But
there's a part of me that feels like they would have admitted, like, it, when it comes to light, everything comes to light, that she would have admitted that they fed him. But I don't. But maybe not.
Well, does she ever? Well, I guess we'll wait till you get to that part because
I'll
get
into why. I think there's the possibility, but I don't think this is what happened. I don't think that's what actually happened, and I'll explain why later. So, like I said, they take off. So police come back. They search the house again. They find you know, a few more blood spattered areas. They take that for DNA testing and they find an old burn pit. And within it, they find parts of like jeans, like the zipper and the little metal parts off of jeans and the blade of a reciprocating saw. The problem is there's no way to test if these were Chris's. There's no way to tell if the blade had been used because that would have burned off any blood,
right?
You know,
totally.
But
it is a little weird that you would randomly have that in your burn pit situation going on.
Yes. So they find out that, you know, they're in Indiana, so they have a warrant to get their DNA. So they have the Indiana police help them. This is how she meets the love of her life. But because, you know, they're taking this stuff and forensics is like, it'd be really nice if we had something to go off of to figure out whose DNA this is. Because Chris Jr. Gives them his DNA to compare for his father's, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So Frizzo goes to Indiana too to collect the DNA and she's talking to them. And she tries to, first with Jason, get him to confess, you know, presses on him. And I think if he would have been pressed a little bit harder, he would have eventually broke.
Mm-hmm.
So then she tells, you know, she's telling Kelly, she's like, you know, Jason's talked. I think if you, I can help you. She's like, maybe he did it and you're scared. I can help you, but you have to tell me. And she's like, I think I need a lawyer now. Like, if you're going to try to keep doing this, then I want a lawyer. I'm not going to talk to you further.
Yeah.
So Frizzle's like, cool. I can't help you. If you try to come to me later, I'm not going to be able to help you.
Yeah. This is your time to shine here.
So really, unfortunately, unfortunately, all the DNA that comes back, they're like, yes, it's blood, but we can't tell whose. So
that's not helpful.
No. And that's, you know, by January 6, 2016, it's cold. They have nothing else to go on.
Did they try to ping his phone or anything? Or did you?
You know, they got records to see text messages and stuff, but it doesn't talk about if they tried pinging his phone or anything like that. I would hope they did. I don't know.
Who knows?
Because I don't think they ever found his phone either.
Weird.
Huh. So then we come to February 20th of 2016, and Kelly calls 911 saying Jason is unresponsive. When the EMTs get there, they say she's hysterical and she's actually like getting in the way and hindering them because she doesn't want to leave him and stuff. So they're hindering from him, giving him any aid. So they get her out of the room, but he's purple and hot and had been clearly been vomiting, but he's sitting up, but they realize like he's gone. There's no life-saving measures to give.
Oh,
and
dang.
There's a needle by him and they're like, it was a heroin overdose. Which, for his back pain, you know, they're like, okay, this is a man who had severe back pain. Like, this isn't unheard of. Except now, a friend of Jason's, Walter, comes forward and tells police that he thinks it's weird. He's like, Jason never did more than weed.
Right. That was never even mentioned until...
Yeah, and he talks about how controlling Kelly had become. Like, it sounds like they were gamer friends. I don't know that they knew each other in real life. I think they just talked a lot through gaming. I'm not 100% sure. Because he talks about how, like, anytime they were gaming together, the moment Kelly got home, he was like, I have to get off Kelly's home. Which also, I'm sorry, though, if your wife is working multiple jobs and you're just sitting home
right.
playing games all day.
Yeah. I mean, like, she has a right to somewhat have a say in some things, considering she's the one making the money. Yeah. So.
But I guess they're saying once they moved back, like, he was very isolated and things like that. So police convince Walter to call Kelly and record the conversation and tell her, which this is a lie they made up, that Jason sent him a letter in January saying, if anything happens to me, mail this envelope for me, please.
Jeez, they come up with it. They're storytellers, aren't they?
And he tells Kelly that this address or this mailing, it's this envelope is, what do you call it? Addressed to the Iron River Police. Oh. And she goes, are you kidding me? And he goes, no. She was like, oh my God, please don't send it. And he was like, in that moment, I knew, he's like, I didn't want to think so. He's like, but I knew, I knew she had done this. And around that time, so then it's like also like February 23rd, the medical examiner comes out saying, yeah, actually, he didn't die of a heroin overdose. There is a ton of heroin in his system, but there's also bruising and these capillaries broken around his face and nose and stuff that indicate that he died by asphyxia, by strangulation.
Okay.
So Kelly is arrested.
Was there no bruising around his neck? Like,
I don't know. It just, it talks about on the face. Because
which,
then,
I
like,
guess I don't know when you die from a heroin overdose too, what your body can do. So I guess some of that could
I don't know that she was really
string.
It sounds like she was mainly like, and I'll kind of come to this. Yeah. But in the interview, so they show this interview too. So at first she was like, you know, he was unresponsive. I thought he was just asleep. She says she slapped him to try to wake him up because he wouldn't wake up. They're like, well, do you think you slapped him hard enough to bruise him? She's like, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe, maybe. Because I just couldn't get him to wake up.
Yeah, because you probably put the heroin in him to make him non-responsive. Okay.
So, Kelly pretty quickly, though, is like, yeah, no, I did it. It was revenge for Chris.
So, Quack Quack killed Chris.
Well, okay.
That's basically what she's trying to pin that on him then.
It's... The quack, thing quack. Is, I think she could have done a much better job if that's what she was doing.
Once again.
Not telling you how to get away with murder, but come up with a better story.
Duh.
So she says on their wedding night, her and Jason made a pact that if either one of them ever cheated, whoever did the cheating had to kill the person they cheated with.
Oh, dang.
And she said, I thought it was just a joke, but he was serious and he threatened me.
You don't hear.
Yeah.
Most weddings.
She was like, he threatened me that if I didn't do this, he would kill me. So on October 14th, she lures Chris over with dinner and sex. She says that they were actually in the middle of having sex when Chris, or when Jason shot Chris. So, like, and it shows you, it's hard to explain. In Dead North, she eventually comes back to this house to show things to the police. Like, she's very cooperative at this point. She's like, this is where his body is. And she's like showing them, they even go back to the house and she's like, oh, there's some forceps you guys just ignored in the sink here. She's like, yeah, I used those to dig the bullet out of him. And I don't think I cleaned it. She's like, I didn't clean it. I don't know if Jason did. So while she's there.
Okay. That's a lot.
The Indiana detective is like, okay, so show me what happened. So it seems like there was a side door and there's a very tiny square section where you could either then go downstairs into a basement or up a few stairs into the kitchen. And I guess they were getting hot and heavy there on the stairs, she says.
I can't believe that it even went to that point that the husband would even allow it to get that far if he's right. That pissed about it. But okay. Right. Okay.
And this is just her saying that. And I wonder if it's true. At first, it's like she didn't know he was home or something, you know?
And then that's the story they came up with.
Yeah. And so then she said, because then in Dead North, it's showing the video of her showing him. She's like, so then Chris was in front of me walking up these couple stairs and I was behind him and Jason shot from the basement. So it's like he shot past you to hit Chris in the back of the head, which Chris was shot in the back of the head. They will later determine that is true.
Okay.
So she says
that's
that
bizarre,
Chris then,
though, that she was behind him and didn't get
right.
It.
So she's like, Chris fell backwards and then fell into me and we both fell down the basement stairs. And this is where, which the Indiana detective, she's like, he's like, I don't know the like statistics for how likely it is that you'd be shot in the back of the head and fall backwards instead of forwards. He's like, I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but it's highly unlikely.
Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about that. Not that I need to be, but yeah, I guess that's right.
Because the
momentum
of the bullet, you'd be pushed
push
forward.
You forward. Yeah. Unless you were like barely on the edge of the stair then. And then
It's a weird
you would
thing,
be like, instant. Okay. It's fine. Yeah. We don't need to go into it.
So, then Jason cuts his body into pieces and they're like, well, how big? She's like pretty small. It depended on the body part.
Oh my gosh. I can't. It's bad enough when someone kills someone, but then when they take it to that level, it's like, mm-hmm. It just shows a whole different side, like a monster, even more.
Yeah.
Side,
so,
just a beast, sick.
But they're like, they're like, with all of that, we would expect there to be tons of blood, and they move the washer and dryer. Like, there's no blood. And so this will come in later where, like, Frizzo says that she thinks that Chris wasn't the first. And again, we'll come back to that. But she's like this, all the cleaning they did of the car, of the house, how they covered the blood that they
impeccable,
did have.
But left the forceps in the sink.
Yeah.
Okay. That's weird.
But
though.
The police missed it until she pointed it out. So, you know, she's like, yeah. And so she shows him where his body would have been. And they bring in cadaver dogs, which they hit on exactly where she showed them. And they find a bag. Now, in Snap, they're like, yeah, his skull was there. In this, they were like, the bag had clearly been broken into by animals, and his skull was a few yards away.
Ugh.
But there was a bullet hole in the back of his skull.
That was the only piece they found, though. I mean, anything else either was ravaged by animals.
And actually, when they're out in the woods, like, reenacting parts for the documentary, one of the crew finds his lower jawbone.
Okay. That's disturbing.
Yeah. But nothing else is ever found. But again, these are vast woods. Like, so vast.
So, I mean, it could be.
It could have gone to other bits and dragged them. So that's where I'm like, is it possible that they fed them? Yes. But especially with what she comes on to say later, I feel like she would have admitted to that.
Well, if she was telling all the other details and is going as far as to show them the body.
Yeah.
I mean, she's probably going to be serving enough time anyway, that why would you not just tell them that?
Well, I'll go into more detail again, but later it kind of sounds like she tries to make herself sound like she's a sociopath. And so I feel like she would have, again, admitted to this to further that.
Well, and if enough time had passed, I mean, clearly the decomp like situation, and once you're, you know, dismembered someone, I feel like that can change the
time span. They don't find him. they don't find his body. This is now May of 2016, I think, when they finally find his body part. So, like,
it's been two years.
Yeah, there's like coyotes and wolves and stuff in there.
So it really coyotes could
especially
be out there.
Are scavengers.
Yeah. Nah.
I think, unfortunately, I don't think she fed that. I don't think they fed them to the neighbors.
And what would be the point? I mean, I know the point, I guess, discarding evidence, but like, yeah. I don't give it to your dog or something. If you, I mean, mm-hmm. which is still disgusting. I mean, I get
which
that.
Has also happened. Other
I hate
stuff,
that
but
sentence,
yeah.
but yeah. Okay. Let's yeah. Yep, okay.
So she even shows police like where out in this lake that used to be an old mine or whatever, where they uh-huh. dumped the gun that killed him. Divers find it. And the forceps that they take is the only piece of evidence they found that actually has Chris's DNA on it. Because they didn't clean that. So, I don't know how this woman, but she's, like, out on bail. And...
Yeah. After that, kind of, probably just because, yeah. well, she yeah. probably was volunteering information for that purpose, yeah. so...
Yeah, and like I said, she said the moment Jason killed Chris, she was already plotting his murder because Chris was the love of her life. And like I said, Eric, when they interviewed him, was like, everyone knows Kelly lies. She spreads yeah. all these tales. She told everyone about how abusive Jason was, how he threatened her. And the thing is most likely Chris, like, she might have actually been in love with Chris, but it sounds like Chris probably rejected her. And so she oh, yeah. decided for him to pay. And I bet you she talked Jason into killing him.
Right.
Because if Jason is so enamored with her that he will let her sleep around even though he hates it.
Yeah.
Of course he's going to kill her lover. So. So yeah. So then. Kelly disappears for a bit. She tries to make it seem like she's on the Never Eat Show, West Coast in California or something. And she turns off her cell phone. But. The detective from Indiana keeps texting her, and this girl keeps turning on her cell phone to look at these. I'm like, you got cocky. You could have gotten away. Listen, you could have gotten away with so many things. If you wouldn't have killed Jason, you probably could have gotten away with this. If you wouldn't have been impatient and decided to smother Jason, you probably, the amount of heroin you gave him, he probably would have choked on his own vomit and died eventually. I think you just got impatient. You could have gotten away with his murder. You didn't.
Right. That's what I was thinking. Like, if he's going to have enough heroin in his system anyway, why wouldn't you just let that be and then actually use that?
Yep. I think she just got too impatient. So they eventually find her in Kentucky. And after that, there's not a whole lot. She gets tried in Michigan first for Chris's death, and she tries to play the victim card. She even takes the stand herself saying, you know, Jason was emotionally and physically abusive, always threatening to kill her and then kill himself. And that if she didn't go along with the plan, he would have killed her. The jury doesn't buy it, though. They're like, nah, bitch, you're guilty as hell. Guilty of first-degree murder, life in prison.
Good.
So then she's...
As they should.
Yep. So then she's sent back to Indiana, and where she's going to be tried for Jason's death. But she takes a plea deal, and she's like, pleads guilty, and then she just gets an extra 65 years added to it. So she's appealed. I don't think she's wanted. I haven't seen anything about it. She's appealed her conviction with Chris. But the thing is like, so then she gets sent back to, I think, Michigan to serve out her term. But her brother actually then comes forward and goes to police and tells them that he thinks there are other victims.
Oh, dang.
He said that there were times where he'd be with Kelly and Jason, and he knew, like, they were talking about an affair Kelly was having, and Jason said, I'll kill him if you want me to.
Okay.
Which also leads me into thinking this. And then it sounds like they play a phone interview of Kelly talking with her mom while Kelly's in prison. And her mom's like, have you always been like this? Whatever. She's like, yeah, yeah. And she's like, why didn't you tell me? Like, we could have done something. And Kelly tries to be like, no, I've always been this way. And there's no helping it. There's no fixing it. I've tried. And she tried to tell the detective from Indiana, she always tried to be like, what's wrong with me? What am I? Trying to get him to diagnose her. And she told Laura Frizzo that she had no feelings, she had no emotions, no remorse. So I think she was trying to make herself sound like a sociopath. So yeah. She said that there was 9 other victims, but there's been no proof of that. And I'm like,
wouldn't there have been some sort of, yeah, like, missing person situation, yeah, or something suspicious? And I'm like, suspicious.
The thing is it's like, you could have gotten away with Chris's murder. You guys did a whole lot of shit that, like, mm-hmm, you could have gotten away with it. So there's a part of it's like, maybe. But I also think because of the shit she went through, like, I don't know. I think it's just her trying to, like, seem more scary and more quote unquote badass, if you will, than she is.
She's already in now.
Because she's already in. So that's where I think that if they did feed him to the neighbors, she would say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, that's true. Because
she's trying to say she killed all these 9, like, they killed these 9 other people. And I'm like, no, I think Jason had actual guilt for what he did.
Yeah.
I think he would have done it again in a heartbeat for her. But I think that she had him so wrapped around her little finger, so manipulated that he would do anything for her. Mm-hmm. But I think he couldn't handle the fact that it's one thing to have those dark thoughts and to, like, write about them.
Right.
I think it's another to actually go through with it.
Yeah, and act on it. Yes.
And to have done it. So I think eventually Jason either would have completed suicide himself or he would have gone to the police.
Yeah.
I think if she'd have just been a little more patient, I think Jason would have completed suicide on his own because he wouldn't want to, if he did that for her, he wouldn't want her to get in trouble.
No, he would do that before going to the police probably.
Uh-huh.
Because, yeah.
So that was,
That's pretty crazy. The name is so familiar, and maybe that's why, but I know
and
I've heard
so
that
I
name.
Remember, because, like, one of the things I read talked about how she said he cut off one of his hands and, like, waved at her with it and said, this is Chris waving goodbye to you for the last time. And I remember that distinctly from an article, I think, around that time. Like, it was a headline of girlfriend or wife says husband used her lover, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Gosh. Because at first she was like, yeah, he did that, you know, it was him, I didn't know, or whatever. Because the thing is like, she would bring, like, Eric even, like, mentioned how they had gone back to her house a few times to have sex. And they're like, where was Jason? He's like, I don't know. He's like, honestly, I thought they were separated.
Okay, well, mm-hmm. Dang, that says a lot, too, because who knows what she was telling those people. And
right.
Chris, what he knew. And
yep. I weird. Think Jason knew everything. I think Jason knew about Chris and Eric, but who knows what Eric and
they
Chris
knew,
actually
what
knew.
What she shared with them.
Yep.
Gross.
So yeah, that's, like I said, I'll probably just title this a Michigan one, because that's where a lot of Chris was the main victim here. I mean, Jason, I'm not saying, Jason killed.
He was just whipped and,
Not
that, like, that excuses it, but, like,
no.
You know.
But, I mean, like, his was pretty straight. They found out pretty quickly that, you know.
Yeah, totally.
His was homicide. Chris, they didn't know for over 2 years, you know.
Yeah.
So, I will say, I guess, like, the manager of the city manager or something like that of Iron Rivers, like, really didn't like Laura Frizzo and fired her shortly after she solved this case. I think she sued him. I don't know what happened there. But it's funny to me that he kept his job because, like, shortly after he got it, it came out that, like, he had misappropriated funds and was, like, sexually harassing or sleeping with, like, employees and stuff. And I'm like, how did he keep his job? So, like, then I'm, like, kind of on her side. But then, and at that time, I was like, okay.
Like her,
but then she made that remark. And I was like, no.
I just don't like any of them. How about that?
No.
Weird.
So,
crazy.
Yeah, that's a weird Iron Rivers, Michigan.
Dang.
Yeah.
That's dark. I'm gonna have to watch some of those documentaries because now I'm just kind of curious. So
yeah, like I said, they drag a little bit. The Dead North one drags a little bit at times, but it was, I mean, it gave a lot of detail.
Yeah, interesting. Huh. Cool. Well, not cool, but yeah.
I mean,
in this realm, yeah, cool for the podcast. But you know, wow. Okay. Well, thanks for sharing, Cassie.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I know.
Yeah.
Now I'm, you know, I tell you what, this one, I wanted to find something that was like, I was going to try to find something that was like kind of paranormal based, or I was trying to find like some sort of like female cryptid or urban legend or something. Because I'm like, I haven't done one in so long.
I know.
And I kind of found something. I kind of found something, but I was like, I don't know if there's enough information for this. And then I stumbled across this one and I was like,
this is a crazy
of course one. I found the thing of like what potential serial killer fed neighbor's, you know, lover. And I was like, oh snap. And then I'm getting into it. I'm like, you clickbaity shit.
Mm-hmm. I know. I feel like that something about the headline. Like I remember like seeing something about like being barbecued or like grilled or like something. Yeah. I don't know. That's kind of what I'm, but gross. Yep. Okay. Well, yep.
So
on that note, we'll see what I bring next week, I guess. I don't know what I have yet, but figure that out.
It'll be April. And so, that's it. I want to say I did hit my 10 book reading goal for my trans rights readathon. That was so many books. Good job.
10 books in a week is crazy.
It was a lot. It was a bit exhausting by the end of it. I got to the point where words started to look weird and I had issues saying words. It was fine, you know? So I've read a ton. I can't even narrow down, you know?
Yeah, that's great. I read a couple, but...
So I've watched nothing. I've got to catch up on Shrinking and some other stuff. There was something I was going to watch. I was like, ooh, I'm going to watch this. And now I don't remember what it was that I wanted to watch.
Yeah, I don't even know. I've been busy and I haven't really watched anything, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't even think, keep the day straight. So
it's same
right now. We'll see.
I know. But so I'm going to try to finish my K-drama, but I'm probably not going to do that until tomorrow. Cause now I'm going to edit this and stuff and maybe to get a nap in before kids get home. We'll see.
Yes. That sounds like an amazing plan, girl. You get that nap.
Heck yeah. But also just a reminder for you guys, Grand Comic Fest in Grand Island is happening April 21st, 22nd, 23rd. We'll be there. So if you want to see us, tickets are on sale now. You can find their Facebook page. We'll share that here soon and stuff too on our Facebook page and everything. If you want to meet us in person, all the fun things, we're working on having some merch, at least a couple things, maybe a t-shirt or two. So exciting things are in the works, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
So let us know. Is there a quote or a saying or something you'd like to see on a sticker or a t-shirt or a tote or something? Email us at heartland.darklandpodcast@gmail.com or reach out to us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all the things.
Yeah, all the things.
All the things. Until next time, stay Heartland kind.
But Darkland wary.